I'm Batman.
No, I'm not. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to another edition of The Ranking, the cracking Empire magazine tie-in in which four Empire writers get together and discuss and rate a famous film franchise or the filmography of a director. And this week, this month, this episode, we have chosen Dark Knight. Yes, it's the Batman movies. All 127 of them. No, there's just about enough for us to formulate a top 10. And over the next 45 minutes or so, I'll be joined by the following Bat panelists: our very own Catwoman, Helen O'Hara.
Thank you for not giving that one to Dan or something.
Or qualifying it by saying that's because you will live with cats.
I don't have any cats. I'd like to make that clear.
You should.
I'm not a cat person.
You're not a cat person?
No.
That's exactly what Selena Kyle would say.
If I were a cat person, I'd be a cat woman, not a cat lady.
All right, good. Next up, we have our very own... What do you think? What do you think I'm going to say?
He's got a goatee. Ra's al Ghul.
Joker? All right, no. Okay. He's our very own Joker because he's the clown prince of crime. He loves the color purple in terms of his banana holder anyway. And because he loves chaos. He's an agent of chaos. Yeah, aren't you, Dan Joland?
Yes, I am. Everywhere I go, I leave a trail of destruction behind me.
I could add to that, but I won't. And last but not least, our very own Riddler.
I knew I was just going to get what's left.
What's left?
It could have been worse. You could have had more Robin.
Batman is one of the greatest rogues galleries in comic books. The Riddler is a good villain. I can't even see you, Ollie Richards. Where are you? There he is, Ollie Richards.
You're missing nothing, honestly.
I am missing nothing. You're the Riddler because I don't understand a word you're saying.
Fair. Very fair.
Who would you have wanted?
Batman. Go big or go home.
Fair enough.
Nightwing. You should have said Nightwing.
Nightwing.
Yes, I could have said that. Nightwing would be
you
good.
You are a dick. So, yeah. That would have worked.
At least it implies youth.
Indeed, you see?
Are you the youngest of us here?
Yes,
God. That's a depressing thought, isn't it?
Very rarely I'm in a room at 38 and the youngest in here.
Can we not put numbers in this conversation? Thank you very much.
Younger by Helen than Helen by just a day, I think. Yes, isn't that right?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay, let's go with that. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to discuss the Batman movies and then we're going to rank them in order and we're going to come up with an official empirical Empire top 10. But I'm going to throw you guys a curveball first of all, because whenever I send you out the list, because there are just enough, as with Star Wars, which was our last episode, there are 10, maybe 11 or 12 if you count the Ewok movies, there were just enough to do a Star Wars top 10. Similarly, there's just enough to do a Batman top 10 if you include the likes of Suicide Squad, in which he appears for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when I sent you the list of the movies that were up for consideration, I put on the list the Lego Batman movie.
Yes.
But I didn't put the Lego movie. And it was pointed out to me by Nick Desemlian that Batman appears as a character in the Lego movie for much, much more screen time than he does in Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to be fair, I don't think will make any of your top tens. But
no.
It's certainly on the list for consideration. So I'm going to throw it up to you guys right now. Do you want to consider the Lego movie? And if so, do you want to change your top tens?
No.
No and no.
No.
No, but I forgot about the Lego Batman movie, so I need to change my top 10 right now.
How did you even get a top 10 without Lego Batman?
I don't know.
Oh my God, you put in Batman v Superman and Justice League, didn't you?
Yep.
I mean, who among us likes Suicide Squad?
Nobody likes Suicide Squad. Nobody likes a Suicide Squad. But
it's not a Batman movie, so we're not discussing it.
Yeah, okay.
It's not a four-star movie either.
Well, okay, that's interesting. Ooh. That is interesting. Okay, so Lego movie, you are out. I thought you guys would have said yes.
No, I feel like he's represented better in Lego Batman.
Okay.
So I went for, Batman movies,
okay.
Speaking.
All right, so Suicide Squad's not a consideration, and the Lego movie is not a consideration.
No.
And let's move on then. But Dan, you're going to put the Lego Batman movie in your top 10.
I'm redoing it right now.
Good man. I look forward to that and then recalibrating on the fly. Okay, so then Batman has been going as a character for over 75 years. He's been on the big screen a whole bunch of times, starting in the 1940s. We're really considering the 1960s onwards, starting with the Adam West Batman the movie, and then moving into, obviously, from 1989 onwards, Tim Burton's Batman was the one that changed the game. And since then, the character's been reinvented a whole number of times, not just personified by different people, but different directors have had a take on him as well. Incredibly durable, incredibly versatile character. Why is that?
I think there's actually very little to him that's canon. And I think that means you can reinvent him at least once a generation for a whole new audience. He's weirdly flexible in that way, I think. And this is one thing where I know I disagree with a lot of Bat fans, which is that I think Adam West's Batman is 100% as Batman as the Christopher Nolan Batman. I don't think Alan Moore got it 100% right with the super dark and gloomy Batmans of the 1980s. I don't think that is the only or the correct way to do Batman. I think if you are a real Bat fan, you have to accept the absurd forms of him as well. Mm-hmm. And so I have, yeah, I feel like he is inherently a little bit ridiculous. And for me, the best Batmans are those that acknowledge, at least to some extent, that it is stupid to dress up as a bat and chase criminals when you are literally... Sorry, that's me. When you are literally a billionaire and could, you know, fix a lot more through normal means.
Stupid or psychotic?
Stupid.
Because that's obviously, you know, the two sides of it, isn't it? You know, either you treat it as stupid and it's all a big joke, or you can take it seriously and go, well, actually, here's someone with something so wrong that they're using all their money to do this ridiculous thing.
But I don't think that anyone's really doing that either. I don't think anyone's really bringing that Batman to us either.
Well, I would argue certainly that Batman Begins and The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises do
no,
that.
No, I don't
yes,
think they do.
Absolutely.
No.
Isn't that why he's good, though, and great cinematically, and that as Helen says, everyone can make their interpretation. And you can make the interpretation, and you could very much argue that throughout all these movies, people have made the interpretation that he's a weird sicko pervert who just likes dressing up, or he is this messed up man who is very, very damaged and, you know, is vaguely psychotic.
I love the fact that the Adam West Batman is neither of those things. He's just a...
I think he's a little bit sicko pervert.
Well, possibly. You know, he's just a paunchy middle-aged billionaire who just likes to dress up and get his kicks by punishing people. Hang on, it is pervy.
Exactly.
It is exactly pervy.
It was the fact that he runs around in satin that I was thinking was, yeah, you know, a little bit strange.
But at the same time, he's got that wonderful, like, very straight-ahead 50s clean-cut attitude. Yeah. Like, even when he's talking to Robin about things, he's you know, rather patriarchally explaining them to Robin and making sure he understands what's going on. And
he's a walking PSA, isn't he?
Yeah, he
constantly.
Is.
Constantly. Robin, don't smoke. 37% of deaths last year were caused by lung cancer in men who smoke.
Robin, remember to carry shark repellent. You never know when you're going to need it.
Is it the fact that because he has no powers, he can far more than any other comic book character, you can just turn him into what you want, because he is just some guy who happens to be very rich. It's not like he doesn't have... There are less constraints on what you can do with him.
Yeah.
Which is what, as Helen says, that every new generation can recreate what their Batman is, which I think doesn't apply so much to other superheroes. And I'm going to slightly get out of my depth, because you all know superhero stuff so much better than me. Like, actually.
Well, no, I think the enduring ones, I think, do it to some extent. I'm just not sure that anyone has done it. Well, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't think anyone's done it quite as drastically as Batman has over time. And I don't think, you know, like the X-Men have definitely evolved. Mm-hmm. Evolved, X-Men. you know, Captain America has very much evolved, like the Nomad era, you know, he's changed massively, the Civil War era.
He reflects more accurately now in the times in which we live, I think, than he perhaps
once did.
If you took that Captain America, the clean-cut do-gooder of the 1940s, 50s and 60s and dropped him into our time, it wouldn't necessarily work. So they've evolved him. But does Batman do that? Does Batman reflect the era around the movies? Is Zack Snyder's Batman more reflective of the times in which we live than Chris Nolan's or Tim Burton's?
I don't feel that's so much the case. I think actually Batman ends up more reflecting the director.
Okay.
That's doing it. Because, you know, the Tim Burton Batman movies are Tim Burton movies. You know, the Chris Nolan Batman movies are Chris Nolan movies. Batman's reinterpreted in the style of those filmmakers. And I think, obviously, the same with the Snyder ones.
I think I don't think he reflects the world so much as he does what the cinematic trends are. Mm-hmm. I kind of take Snyder out of it a bit, because I don't really feel like Snyder's films have defined what their Batman is. I couldn't tell you who Snyder's Batman is. But in the way that Nolan's Blockbuster cinema was going through it. Let's make it in the real world kind of thing. You wanted everything very grounded. The Burton ones were in a period of cinema, well, Batman almost defined it as an era of, you know, pomp and circumstance. They're going as big as possible. It was all about spectacle. So I think they reflect what cinema's going through, but I don't feel like Batman reflects the world.
Although actually thinking about it, the Nolan ones did end up reflecting the world, you know, I think the Dark Knight perhaps not massively intentional. No, they set fire to a fire engine. So that would have been a deliberate thing in terms of a post 9/11 war on terror kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then the Dark Knight Rises had a bit of, you know, what?
It's politics are the thing I hate about it most.
Okay.
It came out the summer after Occupy.
Yeah.
And it cast its villain as the guy who was standing up for the 99% and had a billionaire saving the day. It is the most politically tone-deaf film, I think, of my lifetime. Well, and it irritates me beyond reason.
Celine is also, you know, on the side of Occupy. She's, you know, her and Bane are kind of the two sides of it.
Yeah, but she's just... It just isn't... It doesn't work because she isn't connected to it in any way. She isn't connected to the people at all. She's a lone wolf. So it doesn't matter who she's aligned with because she isn't really aligned with anyone. It's honestly, he is literally, they literally draw a parallel between the people rising up against power and the terror in the French Revolution and the bad guys, plural, because they also have Crane in there. There is no part of that film that can legitimately be read as pro-Occupy. And that just annoyed me a lot.
Well, fair enough.
Because I just don't think our hero should be standing up for the 1% against the 99%. And yeah.
I don't think he was. He had to go through a cleansing of the soul and the bank account in order to strike back against Burn. So yeah, oh. I can see where you're coming from with that one, but I'm going to stand behind Bruce Wayne in this one and his incredible array of wonderful toys that he paid for with his billions.
I think, however you interpret it, it's reflective of the fact that Nolan was all about let's make this as realistic as you possibly can, given the genre.
Yeah.
So that's why his films are more reflective of reality, of the real world as it was happening at the time so they were made, than Burton's or Snyder's or the Adam West.
Of course, Batman Begins isn't.
No, I suppose not.
Well, I was watching Batman Begins last night because it's still my favourite of his three.
You did actual research.
I did actual research. Yeah, I watched two Batman films last night. We'll get to the other.
Okay.
And it is so, and I think this goes across actually all of Chris Nolan's films, or certainly his Bat films. It's so freaking portentous. Like every bit, you know, Hans Zimmer is never knowingly under dramatic in his scores, and he's like full drama the whole way through. And that's in Batman Begins, which is the more restrained of the three. Like, I find it a bit much, to be honest. And then all the sort of gravelly, you know, dialogue, ominous voicing of nonsensical phrases, like, it just got to me. Yeah,
this is why Helen has chosen Suicide Squad at number one. And Batman Begins.
I love that in Batman Begins. I love the kind of the sense of urgency and just the relentlessness of it, the drive that it has. I just remember being massively excited by it the whole way through. I mean, it's we've discussed this before. I think all of us, it kind of, you know, it's weaker at the end. It's final, let's say, third is it doesn't
because
match
if
up
a microwave did that to water, it would be killing people. Come on.
Indeed, yes. And also, even though it's model work rather than CG, it kind of has this kind of visual shift away from, you know, the real world to, obviously, here's some models of a monorail. Mm.
But it has a lot of stuff I love about that film. It's quite high up on my list. And
it's high up on mine.
Yeah. I do love the drive of it. I love the cutting back and forth, the different timelines. I think Christian Bale's fantastic as Bruce Wayne and Batman. More probably so as Bruce Wayne in that film.
I think Bruce Wayne has more to do in that film than any of the others.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's not my number one, but I do think of all the directors who've taken it on, Nolan has most convincingly told the story of who his Batman is. Like, he makes the one where Batman is the centre of it. No one else has Batman as Batman is not the main attraction in anyone else's.
And oh, yeah.
Very
Tim,
much in that
Tim
film.
Tim Burton, you sense, has couldn't give a shit about Batman, especially by Batman Returns.
It's kind of why I love them.
I'm going to throw in a hand here for the other one I watched last night, which is Mask of the Phantasm, where yes. Batman is very much the centre
yes.
of it.
Yes,
and
that, also, is, that is on a list, yeah.
Yeah, and he gets some good dilemma-ing there in a way that I think not all of the films have managed. Like in the Nolan films, you never for a second buy any of his love stories. Like, they're all terrible. And
Rachel!
Oh, God. And I think you do buy a little bit more in the Burton films, a little bit with Vicky Vale, certainly with Catwoman. Those work a little bit better. Mask of the Phantasm, I think, is maybe the best love story of any of the Bat films. Mm-hmm. And the one that best captures his sort of dilemma when he kind of thinks about giving up being Batman mm-hmm. to be happy mm-hmm. and is all tormented about that. And I think that was really interestingly done. I think that was a nice change. So that's why I put that one quite high up on my list.
She's probably the best female lead character apart from
Michelle Pfeiffer.
I was going to say, if we're considering Selina Kyle a major character, then it's not even close to her.
Yeah. No. It's interesting, though. I haven't seen Mask of the Phantasm in a long, long time. How does it hold up?
Pretty well. I mean, the animation's a little bit, you know, shaky at times, but the voice work is obviously great, and I think the story is pretty good. I like it a lot, and I also think it's very good at explaining what we were just saying about Batman Begins. It's very good at explaining why Batman puts on a bat suit, because it has that scene where he fights people. I think Nolan kind of slightly took this for Batman Begins as well, but he has a scene where he fights people dressed in normal clothing and he beats them, but they're not scared of him, and he's like, they need to be scared of me. I need to wear something that will terrify them. What will I do? So it's kind of, so again, as with Batman Begins, it gets that leap, because it is
satin.
A leap.
Mm-hmm. I will wear satin.
It is a leap to I will dress as a giant bat. Like, it's not an obvious thing.
It's a leap. I mean, that is a leap. The other thing I love about Batman Begins is that it has one of the best twists I've ever seen in a major blockbuster. I just did not see coming. And even every time I watch it,
I
still don't see it. I'm surprised every time.
You'll never see me coming.
Well, genuinely, I mean, yeah, I don't think anyone saw Trevor Slattery coming in Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
And I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, maybe you will all correct me here, but I don't think anyone saw Liam Neeson being Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins.
Well, because they went to the trouble of casting Ken Watanabe. So you kind of think, well, it's obviously Ken Watanabe. I'm comfortable with that. I understand what's happening here. I think if they'd cast, you know, an lesser actor, you might have questioned it. You might have dodged it. Yeah, he doesn't have much to do, but he does it brilliantly.
No, I mean an lesser actor.
Oh, an lesser actor. I love his work.
He's fantastic. Yeah. You see that Run of the Bill he did? Ooh, great stuff. And this Hamlet is unsurpassed in the modern era. Okay, so let's go through some of the films bit by bit, and we can begin to lay out our cases here. And I think the one I want to start with is the movie that, for me, is really inextricably linked with Empire. It was on the cover of Empire Issue 2 back in 1989, and I think this movie, as much as any movie in history, with the possible exception of Jaws and Star Wars, obviously, changed cinema, and they changed the way that movies are consumed, and they changed, and it was an actual phenomenon. And that is, of course, hang on, let me just read my notes here. Batman. Tim Burton's Batman.
1989.
Oh.
Correct.
I loved it. It was a 12 and I still got to go see it.
I didn't see it at the cinema, but I remember just its existence being the most exciting thing. I remember just seeing that poster, which was just the symbol all over. Mm. It was actually, I think it was the first time that I was properly aware of a director having made a movie.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
It was the film was created by someone rather than great actors that I love just turned up and made a story one day. I do remember the hype around it was so, so exciting, to the extent that when I actually saw it, I was almost a little bit disappointed, even though I really enjoyed
it.
I thought it was going to be life-changing. Batman Returns was, but I thought Batman was going to be.
I thought it was... I enjoyed it. I mean, it's the first Batman movie I saw in the cinema. And I knew half the dialogue thanks to Prince's Bat Dance single. Just like every line in that film is in that song, which is actually not really a song. It's a medley of all the other songs on the album.
That bat medley.
Lazy Prince. No, too soon. Too soon.
Way too soon.
May he rest in peace.
Yes, indeed. The awareness of it, I think, was insane. Just like you know, you walked into Woolworths on Bexley Heath Broadway and there were bat symbols everywhere.
Well, I certainly did all the time.
Exactly.
You were Bexley Heath Broadway as well? All Bexley Heath
Broadway? Apparently, yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Everyone did, apparently.
They were on my gang. We were like the Crips of Bexley Heath.
The Craps.
Yes, exactly. And every year you could hear it everywhere, you could see it everywhere. And then I went to actually see it. But I mean, I wasn't and am still not blown away by that film. I think I'm not keen on Nicholson's Joker.
Oh, wow.
I'm not keen on the makeup for a start. I don't like the look of him.
Oh, I think the makeup's fantastic.
I think he is just overdoing it, to be honest. And also, I think, you know, for all the talk of that film saying, ooh, it's taking Batman to a new dark place, it doesn't really. Burton wasn't interested in it. He wasn't into the comics. He wasn't into the origins of the character. His reference point was the TV show, the 1966 one.
No, that's not true.
If I'm wrong, if you go back to the time,
you'll notice there's all these books talking about how it's a new, darker take on the character and how he'd gone from The Dark Knight Returns and all of those books of the 80s.
I did not feel that at all from the film, and still don't.
Oh, it's very much there. If you compare that to the 60s TV show, it's absolutely there. And there's a couple of moments riffing on Dark Knight Returns.
Well, it still had a silly edge to it, I thought.
Oh, it does.
I love Keaton's Bruce Wayne. Yep. Keaton's Bruce Wayne is great. But the thing that I can forgive it for, there's two things that really bug me about that film. One is making Joe Chill the Joker.
Yeah.
Which is just, come on.
I don't have a problem with that because I didn't come to Batman from a canonical point of view.
Okay. But also, killing the Joker at the end.
Again, I don't have a problem with that.
Because they make the Joker so much part of the psychology of what created Batman, I almost feel like, well, if he kills the Joker at the end, why is he still Batman?
I get what you're saying. I think I can see both from the angle of the 1980s and prior to the whole comic book era. Both of those decisions make perfect sense. As a narrative one-off, if you are telling a Batman film, both of those decisions are exactly what you do because it makes it incredibly neat and beautifully tied together. You have a lovely mirror image between your villain and your hero. They create each other, which is a beautiful little twist on the whole mythos. As a Bat adaptation, neither of those things is okay. But as a one-off film, that's superb filmmaking.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's too neat, personally.
It only is because you're coming at it from the comics. I agree about Joe Chill in the overall concept of a Batman mythology. I also think that the Joker should not have an origin story. And if you're about to tell me about the Killing Joke, I will tell you that it is not canon. It is explicitly not canon and never should be canon.
You're going to love Todd Phillips' movie with Wacky.
I know, but this is it. Like, the Joker should not have an origin story that is definitive. And that was the one thing I thought Christopher Nolan did brilliantly with The Dark Knight.
You want to know how I got these scars.
That is exactly what the Joker should be. The Joker should always be a force of uncontained chaos, which is one of the reasons Mark Hamill's so good at him in the... in those animated versions.
I go back and forth on the Joker origin thing because I actually think maybe it's because they had Nicholson and they wanted to give Nicholson more to do, and maybe Nicholson didn't want to be wearing the makeup for the entire movie, so there's a whole bit of the movie where he is just himself. That leads to some lovely moments though, where he is Joker-fied and he's wearing skin makeup. I love Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker. I think is he stretching himself? No. Is he having a great time? Yes. Is he iconic? I would say absolutely.
So.
He has so many lines we quote on a almost daily basis in the Empire Office.
He's also so sadistic. Like, there is nothing I don't think that Heath Ledger did that's close to the Alicia scarring.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, that is some twisted shit. And all of the stuff with Vicky Vale, with his sort of pursuit of her, that is psychological warfare of the highest nature, and it is really disturbing. Far more disturbing than any of the relationship in Suicide Squad.
Yeah. That movie is interesting. I didn't see it at the cinema. But I didn't see it at the cinema for a weird reason, in that I was a little bit annoyed by all the hype. And so I was a really contrarian year-old, and I just kind of took against the film in a little way. Well, you know, because I liked Batman, I liked the TV series, the Adam West stuff, I had Batman toys and figures growing up. I wasn't really into the comics that much, but I just remember being a little annoyed that there was, like, everybody at my school who was suddenly into Batman. I was, I'm going to swim against the stream in this one. And so I didn't watch it until it came out on VHS. We are dating ourselves again. I watched it, and I was on a little portable TV with my best friend at the time, and I was absolutely blown away. I became evangelical about it and started collecting stuff and buying the Danny Elfman soundtrack and just going nuts for it. But the main phenomenon of it passed me by. But it did change the way films are made. It really changed the way that Hollywood perceived wide releases, which now has, you know, been further boiled down into this thing where if you don't get, it feels like if you don't make 100 million in your opening weekend and you're gone, you're dead, you're seen as a flop. And it certainly began Hollywood's fascination with comic book movies, which has obviously led to where we are now. But it didn't really follow through on it completely, but it certainly told executives and studios that there is money to be made. There's gold in them thar hills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for that, it is obviously such a landmark film. And it led directly to Batman Returns 3 years later. And I know there are a couple of people in this podcast.
Love it.
Absolutely love it. I think my favourite thing about Burton's take on Batman is that, yeah, you say he's not really interested in the origins of it, but he's interested in these weirdos who just decide they're going to turn themselves into something else, which, and I think that is done best in that film with him and Catwoman. The Penguin, weirdly, the strangest one, is not someone who's dressing up as something else. He is completely himself.
Yeah.
But I really like that it's totally an exploration of how mad are these people who have decided that they're going to create this entirely new life and go out at night in this strange fetish wear and fight crime. I sort of love the non-Batmanishness of it, that it's not the fact that he doesn't delve into any all the comic book stuff. He just establishes these almost new characters. Mm. And I mean, it's almost more about Catwoman than anything. She is such an amazing character. So that was supposed to die at the end.
Really?
In the script, she was. Daniel Waters wrote it so that she dies at the end. He was really annoyed that she didn't die at the end. He was like, they had this sudden CG shot. That's not my story. What did he do? But she is just incredible. I mean, I think she's possibly more than anyone else in the whole Batman universe. No, sorry, aside from Heath Ledger, she's probably the most indelible character of any of the.
I'd agree with that.
Any of the Batman films.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's absolutely her movie. And it's the Penguin's movie as much. It starts with the Penguin, you know, and she gets the origin story, and she gets the emotional arc of the movie. And there's great stuff with Bruce Wayne, but it's on the periphery of the film almost. It feels that way. He's almost even more interested in Max Schreck.
Well, I think because Batman is the easiest one to explain. We know why Batman is who he is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing in the very first Batman, Tim Burton actually opens by making fun of Batman's origin story with another family in an alleyway.
Yes.
And it's a fake out. You think it's going to be the Waynes, and it isn't. It's Batman saving a family in an alleyway, because it was already a freaking cliche in 1989, still we're doing it. Three-time flashbacks in
best
Batman
version,
v Superman.
Best version, quickly, of that? Of the Waynes being murderalized?
It is actually probably Batman Begins.
I think
that's pretty good.
That's because it's Ken Barlow's son. Linus Roach is an amazing actor in his own right, and I think more famous around the world probably than William Roach, but he's Ken Barlow's son, and I can never take him seriously because
But he's really nice in that scene. You know, Bruce gets scared and wants to leave the opera, which seems like a terrible opera to take a child to.
Oh, yeah.
Also, it's an opera, so why are you taking a child to it? But anyway, they leave, and then he's all like, oh, it was me who wanted to leave. Bruce was fine. He was very brave. I just got a bit scared. And it's like, it's cute. It's a nice little father moment.
What do we fall, Master Wayne? Pick ourselves back up.
I actually genuinely say that to my children.
Really?
Yeah.
I always say, I don't have children, but if I did, I'd say, never rub another man's rhubarb.
Well, you shouldn't say that.
But it's good advice, right?
Did you hear about the couple who went around Comic-Con one year? They were dressed in just sort of 1940s nice clothes. She had a string of pearls on. They went up to every single person dressed as Batman and shouted, son! And then fell down dead in front of him.
That's amazing.
I'm not a fan of Batman Returns.
Holy shit.
How dare you?
The bat cat is amongst the bat pigeons.
I'm sorry. I don't disagree about Pfeiffer at all. The look of the character, the design of the character, the way she played it is fantastic. But I just didn't dig the Penguin storyline in any way, shape or form. I was bored by Max Schreck. One of my strongest memories of not enjoying myself in the cinema as a teenager was the moment when all the Penguins come waddling out with rockets strapped to their backs. And I remember sitting there going, what the hell am I watching?
Yeah.
And let's remember that that's still canon according to that one throwaway line of dialogue in, was it Justice League?
Yeah.
Where Jeremy Irons goes, remember when it was just exploding penguins?
Wow. Yes. And of course, the fact that they have Danny Elfman's score in Justice League as well does seem to indicate that It is canon in a way.
It's a bit weird. But I just felt that movie doesn't really feel like a Batman movie to me. It just feels like a Tim Burton movie with Catwoman in it.
I don't disagree with that, and that's not a loss to me because I was not a Batman comic book reader, and I just really enjoyed his creation of it. Why don't you like the Penguin?
It's overdone. Overdone, just kind of like just the makeup, the look of it. Again, I didn't like the Joker, the way they made the Joker look. It just is too monstrous.
So you think an odious, venal, horrible, nasty guy who runs for political office, treats everybody badly, women in particular, and rises to the very top of his profession, you think is unrealistic?
No, not what he did. No, just the way he was presented.
No, if you talk about Batman Returns, for me, the Penguin is the trump card of that film.
Yeah, wow. He's great. Yeah,
I really like him.
Emphasis heavily on one word of that sentence. Card. So you love Batman Returns. That's absolutely number one for you.
Yes, absolutely. And I really love the Penguin for that whole the dressing up thing. The fact that his thing is you're annoyed that I am who I am, and you have to put on that mask to be who you are. I really like that thing of like he's so annoyed that everyone loves you for dressing up like a weirdo. I'm a weirdo, and they hate me. I think that's really really good. Yeah. I really really like that.
Did Tim Burton write that line?
All right, so the those two Tim Burton movies and the two Michael Keaton movies made way, obviously, for Joel Schumacher, Val Kilmer, and George Clooney. Batman Forever and Batman and Robin are, for me, two of the worst blockbusters of all time. Batman and Robin, in particular, is a hate crime of a film that very nearly killed the careers of everyone involved. Clooney managed to claw his way back, thank goodness. In fact, most people have from that film. But it's just a horror show. Did anyone vote for it?
No.
Although in my full list, I put it higher than any of the Snyder ones.
Can I shock you?
Are you sure?
In your list, you've actually put it at number 10.
Did I?
Yeah, you did.
Well, that's because there were 13 in total.
So you're saying it's better than Batman v Superman, Colon Dawn of Justice, Justice League, and Suicide Squad.
I'm certainly saying I enjoy it more. I think it has a camp value that the others don't. I find the Snyder ones are just so downbeat that they're a slog to get through. I can rewatch Batman and Robin. I'm going to fast forward loads of it. But if that was on TV, I'd be much more likely to watch that than any of the Snyder ones. I find them so tedious. I think it's a director who hasn't defined who any of his characters are. I mean, talk about Burton not being really interested in who Batman is. I don't think Snyder is either.
See, I don't agree with that. I think it's almost I'm not entirely sure of the timeline of Man of Steel going in Man of Steel 2 becoming Batman v Superman: Colon Dawn of Justice, but I do have the feeling that he made Man of Steel almost to get his hands eventually on Batman. And I think that he is interested in Batman from primarily an iconographic point of view, that he, as a very visual director, really wanted the chance to do something with Batman as a character. And certainly his introduction in Batman Superman is really interesting visually, and the way he blends into the walls. And
it's back to the Dark Knight Returns nonsense. Not nonsense, it's a fine comic, but like it shouldn't be the only comic that anyone reads. But it's back to this idea of, oh, he's older and grizzled and he's been doing this a long time and it's taken its toll. And it's like, okay, and I find those films. I also think that the big thing, and we've talked about this, I know when we did the spoiler special for BVS, I think Batman has one rule. Now, it's sometimes differently formulated. Either he doesn't kill or he doesn't use a gun, or it's some combination of both. But he breaks both rules throughout the Snyder movies. So is it really Batman? Is it just some dude in a cape?
Well, in fairness, Batman Returns breaks it as well.
Yeah, that's true.
He blows up some clowns.
Yeah. That's true. He breaks it all over the place.
He kills a Joker. I mean, he kills, you know, he falls off a thing, but really.
He doesn't have to save him.
He kills a lot of people.
And also, ethically, in Batman Begins, you know, I don't have to, I won't kill you, but I don't have to save you.
Well, my lawyer friend here may beg to differ. No, he kills a Batman as well, doesn't he? I'm pretty sure
he does kill a Batman as well. But he uses a gun though. So either way.
Yeah. That goes back to Burton, I think, not being interested necessarily in some of the core values of the character. What Snyder does with Batman in Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice is really interesting, in that he turns him into a guy who doesn't like outsiders, he doesn't like this immigrant who comes in and, you know, is getting all the adulation. And it, obviously they do a 180 on the character towards the end of the movie, but there's a kind of toxicity to Bruce Wayne and Batman in Dawn of Justice particularly, which I feel has to be deliberate on Snyder's part. And that character doesn't feel the same to me necessarily in Justice League, and I wonder how much of that is the natural Sunnyside up nature of that movie that they were trying to instigate after Dawn of Justice didn't do that well critically, or how much of it is the Whedonification of that movie. We will probably never know. But I do think that Snyder does some interesting things with the character, not necessarily things I applaud, but certainly he does have a take on it.
I think it's the old problem. You always have this in comics. When you try to set your good guys against each other, someone is usually acting unreasonably and out of character. And so you have both of them in Batman v Superman. And yes, I've seen the longer cut, and I still think this is the case. You have them both acting out of character and irrationally in order to get to that point where they just go after each other.
I think Clark Kent acts more rationally in that movie than Bruce Wayne.
Oh, much so, yeah.
But I've said this to the podcast before. I quite like the longer cut. I think it makes things make a lot more sense. Is it the Batman that I would want to see on the big screen? No. Is it the Superman I want to see? Definitely not. But taken on his own merits as a 3-hour slab of blunderbuss entertainment, then it's totally fine.
I will say one thing to the Batman in Dawn of Justice. I love the suit. I like the look.
Suit
of
is
him.
Good.
Yeah,
suit
well,
is good.
He looks like a tank.
Yeah, he's got the necklace suit.
No, not the armor suit. I'm talking about his normal costume.
Yeah, it still looks like a tank.
Yeah. No. I kind of like the fact that he's kind of big and heavy and burly. I mean, it's the Dark Knight Rises thing. Sorry, not the Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns.
Thing.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of dug it. I thought it looked good.
It's cool from a strength point of view, but you are you're sacrificing flexibility and speed to do that, so I don't know. If Batman is meant to be the sort of the fittest guy in the world, not in the Nightwing sense, but in the athletic sense, then it actually does take away from that a little bit.
I don't know. Bruce Wayne's pretty fetch. Is that what the kids say?
No. I believe it is. Yeah,
no?
But
okay.
As the youngest, I can tell you.
What do they say? Is he dank?
That only applies to memes.
Okay, right, sorry.
I don't know what it means there.
His dank is fetch. Right, we don't
stop
have.
Stop trying to make fetch happen.
Stop trying to make dank fetch happen. We don't have a lot of time left. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask very, very quickly before we go through the top 10, I'm going to ask for your favorite Batman actor. Who has filled the suit better? And you can include Kevin Conroy and Will Arnett in this.
Yeah, I'm very tempted to say Will Arnett. We haven't talked about Lego Batman, but I love how petulant he is. I think Keaton is still my favourite. I love his reaction recently. Someone asked him, how you feel about all these other people playing Batman? And he says, I'm fine with it because, I'm Batman. and that is the perfect answer, and one that I don't think Christian Bale is capable of giving. So it's Michael Keaton for me.
I'm sad he never played the role again. I'm sad that he left when Burton left. I do sometimes wonder, would he have made a better fist at Batman Forever? And I will love Batman Forever for one reason, one reason only. Hold me, thrill me, kiss me, kill me.
Oh, yeah. great song.
Also, do you know why else I like Batman Forever?
Why?
There's the bit where Robin goes, holy rusted metal, Batman. It's rusted metal, and it's full of holes.
It's also the movie on which Jim Carrey annoyed Tommy Lee Jones so much that he went up to him in a restaurant when they were filming the film. When they were shooting the shoot, and Tommy Lee Jones turned around to him and said, I cannot sanction your buffoonery, which is one of the greatest slogans anyone has ever said.
And you've got a hand, it says Schumacher, making a film with Tommy Lee Jones and Val Kilmer at the same time. Yeah. I mean,
the difficulty rating is high.
Yeah. 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 The thing you do have to say for Schumacher is he definitely had an aesthetic. He knew what he wanted Batman to look like. I mean, it was garish and horrible, but he knew he had a take.
That's true.
Yeah, he did. And I don't know how much he could be blamed for Batman and Robin.
Oh, I think he can.
I think it's absolutely at his hands.
I think I'm going to level most of the blame at Akiva Goldsman.
No, I disagree. And I think Schumacher would put his hands up to it. I interviewed him ages ago for Phantom of the Opera, and we started talking about it. And I was kind of, you know, gently working my way up to it. Thinking, oh, he's not going to want to talk about Batman and Robin. I started talking about it. So, why? You've got all nervous. What are you all nervous about? So, I need to ask you about Batman and Robin, and I don't know how you're going to feel talking about it. So, what? You mean the film that made the studio a fortune, made all of us a fortune, and was, as far as I was concerned, a great experience? I think he made the film he wanted to make. He was happy with it.
He set out to make a terrible film. We always say in the podcast, no one ever sets out to make a terrible film.
But I think he didn't seem unhappy with it, and he didn't make any noises that suggest that he was forced into anything, like the nipples, like that he seemed fine with those.
No, that's all fine, but what I mean is the script is one of the worst screenplays ever written, and so I'm going to lay a lot of the blame at the door of Akiva Goldsman for that, who naturally went on to win an Oscar and then screw up lots of other things besides. But hey, it's all good. So anyway, Keaton?
Top three are Bale, Bale, and Bale.
Good God. You're so on brand.
I think Bale's a bit of an unfashionable choice, really. I think all the hipsters down in Shoreditch will be saying Keaton.
Really?
Or Kevin Conroy.
Really? Well, the hipsters down in Shoreditch say a lot of things that I would I would never put in my mouth.
They went to another school, Dan. You don't know them.
No. I just think, and also what you've got with Bale, Bale, and Bale is a complete journey with the character, which I really like. A beginning, middle, and an end of Bruce Wayne and Batman. So,
True, but that's not really down to him. That's his fortune of being in a trilogy.
Fair enough. But in terms of the performance, it's a full journey, and I think he does the, you know, A to M to Z, or however you want to say it, perfectly.
Yeah, I'm split between the two. I do think that Bale is superb, but yeah, I kind of have to go Keaton as well, and partly again because I like the thing of, he doesn't look like a superhero. He's the kind of guy who should put on a costume so that people will be terrified of him and take him seriously as a crime fighter. Whereas Christian Bale could go out and says, look, I've got 4,000 abs. I can beat you to death in 2 seconds. Whereas if Michael Keaton tried to start a fight with you, well, I'd be scared because anyone would scare me.
But Bale gets the slickness of that character in a way I don't think anyone else did. I'm thinking of the moment. I mean, he holds his own against Heath Ledger as the Joker in The Dark Knight. And I've seen some people say he doesn't. He absolutely does. But there's a moment when the Joker breaks into his penthouse apartment and takes and you know, starts running amok around the party, and Bale as Wayne is just so calm and just walks off very calmly to his what they think is a panic room, but obviously he's going to turn into Batman, and that is a moment that just makes me think he really nailed that side of the character. And because Nolan was making a stealth Bond film, especially with Batman Begins, he plays him almost as a Bond, as James Bond, and I really like that take on the character. Helen won't.
No. he did it even more, I think, in Dark Knight Rises. That was the one where I was scribbling over my notepad, like in really big letters, like, fuck off and make a Bond film already, Jesus.
Who, Nolan?
Yeah.
She did. I sat next to her. It was very distracting.
It was your notepad as well.
It was just like when one out of every two women is evil, like I just can't be having with it.
Felt tip all over Ollie's iPad.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing is, I totally agree with you on Bale, and I think he is the one that most of all got the psychotic edge of the character. You definitely felt like, particularly in that moment where he walks away from so many things calmly, you get this guy is unhinged.
There's not two levels to the Bale Batman. There's three, aren't there? Because there's the real Bruce Wayne, there's the fake Bruce Wayne, and there's Batman.
Yes.
Which we hadn't seen that before.
Yeah,
and I thought he handled really well, especially in Batman Begins.
Who does the best bat voice?
Keaton. Kevin Conroy is supposed to be the right answer here, isn't it?
But I always feel his Batman voice is pretty much the same as his Bruce Wayne voice. Yeah. There's not a lot going on there of differentiation.
Arnett, then.
Arnett.
Yes, it is. It's Arnett. It's not Bale. Bale's is stupid.
Nailed it.
Bales is too much. Arnett's is great.
Arnett's is hilarious.
All right. Okay. We don't have any time left. So what we're going to do is I'm going to quickly collate your top tens and then come back in 2 seconds. And then we're going to run through the top 10 very, very quickly and get your reactions to it. How's about that then?
Great.
Oh, we do moment.
Oh, fuck it. All right. We don't have a lot of time, but very quickly. Moment. Best moment in the Batman film. Ollie.
It's actually not a Batman moment. It's the Catwoman moment.
God damn it. That's what I was about to
say. Yeah. It's the kitty litter moment. I just love it.
Oh, I was thinking the bit where she flip-flops out of the department store, stops in front of Batman and the Penguin and says meow, and then the entire store explodes behind her.
Oh, mine is when she falls into the kitty. It's just the way she says, bastard.
well, it's the Batman Joker interrogation scene in The Dark Knight, quite clearly, isn't it? Followed closely by Lobster Thermidor.
Oh, Lobster Thermidor.
That is good. those great moments. I love the truck flip. I love the bit where the bat pod goes up against the wall in The Dark Knight.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't think we really talked about The Dark Knight.
No.
Because The Dark Knight's my number one.
Yeah,
and it's an extraordinary piece of filmmaking. Both as a Batman movie and as a thriller, as a Michael Mannian action blockbuster, it is incredible. And it came out in 2008, and two comic book movies came out that year that changed everything. One was Iron Man, the other one was Dark Knight, and both still hold up to this day. And I still remember going to see that movie, which I think since has become a bit lionized because of Heath Ledger's performance, but everything else works. The opening shot, the opening sequence, Bill Fichtner's cameo in an opening bank heist.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't think, what's his name from The Wire, the Irish fella from The Wire and Game of Thrones, he plays the same function essentially as the CIA agent in Dark Knight Rises.
Aidan Gillen,
thank you. He's in that same sort of wheelhouse in Dark Knight Rises, doesn't quite work. But I just remember being at the screening, packed multimedia, I was living in LA at the time, and watching that sequence, a whole bat pod, tumbler into bat pod, truck flip sequence, which makes not a blind bit of sense when you begin to scrutinize the plot, but anyway.
Literally, none of the plot makes any sense. Like, we should be clear on this. The plot does not make sense.
The Joker's grand plan is complete bollocks, but we'll get past that. It's fine. But the bit where the Batpod goes up against the wall and flips round and continues the chase again got a round of applause, almost like a standing ovation in the cinema. And it's one of those goosebump moments that will just live with me forever. And for that reason, I've gone for Dark Knight as my number one, and that's probably my number one moment. Although I do also love the moment in Batman 1989 when Keaton as Bruce Wayne flips out with the Joker and goes, "You want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts." Because that's the moment when he gets this character.
Yeah.
I've got another moment.
Okay.
Batman 1966, where he's running around with the bomb and he wants to throw it in the water, and he sees the baby ducks.
Brilliantly, of course, riffed on in Wallace and Gromit, as I think we all remember.
All right, that is it. That is the definitively the number one Batman moment. We'll be back in a couple of bat seconds with the empirical top 10. Okay, so here we are. I have done all the bat totting of the bat scores and the top 10. Dan, you changed things. You changed things.
Yep.
You changed the placement of specifically, let me just make sure I got this right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Well, okay, Justice League was not in the top 10 anyway, but you demoted it from 10 to 11 on your list, thus giving it just a mere 1 point. Batman and Robin also got 1 point because Ollie put it there at number 10.
I'm so sorry.
But that's fine. Suicide Squad didn't get any votes, guys.
Aww.
Not a Batman film?
Well, he is in it. But then, bat can open, bat worms everywhere. All right, so starting at number 10, it is Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah? Dismissive sniff from Ellen. My word. Number 9, Batman Forever.
I still enjoyed it.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah?
it's stupid, but...
Yeah, it has its moments.
Yeah.
It has its moments.
It is not on my list. I went for both of the Snyders above that movie. Although they don't have a kick-ass U2 track, do they? Number... hang on.
8.
Thank you. Number 8. Because I haven't written it in order, so I'm looking at the points tally. Number 8, Batman 1966.
Oh, that's harsh.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's... I mean, look, it's fun. It's got very colourful characters. It's got a bit with ducks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard. It's hard to dislike, basically.
Yeah.
You can't hate that movie.
You have to be really self-important to dislike it.
Yeah.
Number 7?
Sure.
Thanks, Helen. You're keeping track here. The Lego Batman movie.
What? 7?
Yeah.
That should be higher.
Well,
it should be higher. Yeah.
Well, it ain't. I'm here to tell you it ain't. I didn't put it in my top 10.
That's why.
No, I did.
Oh.
I did. I put it at number 9. I don't like that film very much.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
Man. Yeah,
oh
it's God. It's no Lego movie.
It's the bit where Batman tells Alfred that he couldn't possibly understand what it's like to have a son. Oh, it's amazing.
All right, I'm back aboard. That's great. At number 6, The Dark Knight Rises.
It's higher than it should be.
That's lower than it should be.
Higher than it should be.
I agree. It's easily the worst of his, but I think there's so many good things. Yeah. Anne Hathaway is so brilliant.
She's great in that.
Yeah,
she's
really great in that. And there's so much good stuff in it. I agree. It's got a lot of issues, and most of the last hour is not good. But
I love the bit where the guy goes off, the hero of the film goes off with a broken back, and then just fixes it.
Yeah.
Through willpower.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps doing that, though. Like, why do you have that at the beginning? And then, like, just stop. I just hate it. I don't hate it.
Oh, my God.
I do really dislike it, though. It really irritates me, and it irritates me all the more for having so many good bits and Anne Hathaway.
I think it's very, very rewatchable. I mainly rewatch it just to try and decipher a little bit more Bane's dialogue.
I think it's better than Batman Returns.
Better than Batman Returns. What a lovely, lovely opinion. Next on the list, because I've lost track. Number five is Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Okay.
Good, fair, solid.
I had it higher,
but that's all right.
To quote another superhero movie, Helen, it's not about you.
Thanks. Which one's that from?
Doctor Strange.
Famous line from Doctor Strange.
That's a famous line from Doctor Strange. I'm always quoting it.
Is it the famous line from Doctor Strange?
It's the only line from Doctor Strange. Number four. Let me just make sure we get this right, because if I fuck this up, this is bad. Number four, Batman. 1989, Michael Keaton as Batman.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's dead on.
That's all right.
Yeah. I think this top four is... I think I know where it's going, but I'm not going to argue with this top four.
You think you know where it's going?
Mm.
Interesting.
And I know where I've been. What?
Number three. Batman.
Begins.
Returns.
There's been tomfoolery afoot.
Two number ones.
Yeah.
Two number fives.
Oh, dicks.
Dicks returns.
Yeah.
Dicks begins.
Yep, sorry.
And Dicks returns. That's fine. You're not happy with it? Number three?
No, I was going to get number two.
Number three is a podium placement. Number three is a bronze medal. Number three is a mention in dispatches.
Fine. I mean, I came for gold.
I didn't come here to make friends.
No, and I haven't.
I mean, I put it in number six, so I think it's done well.
Number six?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Weirdo.
Oh, you have, haven't you?
Yeah.
Oh, it's dropped down a point then, hasn't it? Because you had it number five in your original list.
No, I gave you the new list.
No, number five in your original list. So I didn't. I thought you'd just knocked something down a little bit.
No. Lego Batman.
I'm just going to make sure your list tallies. Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Dark Knight Rises, Lego Batman in at number four, dropping everything down a point. So Batman 1989 drops down a point as well, but that doesn't change anything. So it's all still the same. Number two, Batman Begins.
Excellent.
Shock?
That's exactly what I put it.
Not at all.
No?
Yeah. I always thought that was going to be way up the top, and it should be.
See, I find that film is much maligned. Not here, because you guys don't work in the office, but whenever it's mentioned in the office, I am the sole defender of that
film. Really?
Yeah.
For what reasons?
People think it's bloated, overlong. I don't think they rewatched it, but it's always on ITV4, so stick it on.
It's so rewatchable.
Yeah.
It's so rewatchable. I think I've seen it, it makes sense that I'd seen it more times than The Dark Knight, because it's been out for longer, but yeah, I've seen it more times.
Yeah.
In fact, it is the Batman movie I've seen the most.
I haven't seen it a lot of times, but I think it does such a good job of establishing who its Batman is. I think that is great filmmaking.
Especially when you consider contextually where it was when it was made.
Mm. Mm. Exactly, yeah.
You know, it was 8 years after, we're talking at the moment about, is it, Neil Blomkamp is just rebooting Robocop just a few years after they made a terrible remake, and that conversation's in the ether. Is it too soon to reboot? And they were rebooting 8 years after Batman Forever screwed the pooch. And there was so much writing in that film, not just for Nolan, but for Warner Brothers, and for everything in a way. And it was such a bold gambit to do what they did with that film, to try and ground it as much as they did.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's you were talking about the action moments in The Dark Knight earlier, and you could, like, the thing Batman Begins doesn't have is good action. There's like his...
Yeah.
I don't think Nolan is naturally a great action director. He's become one. But in that film, there's a lot of the action is...
Choppy.
Choppy.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of, it's one of its strengths is that it doesn't rely on being an action movie. Mm. It's very much a character-based movie, yeah. and it does it brilliantly.
One weird thing about Batman Begins that I noticed last night is it kind of takes away a little bit from the whole Batman being a genius a little bit, because it outsources a lot mm-hmm. of his tech genius to Lucius Fox.
That's true.
Which I think is odd.
Very true.
Obviously, in the Christopher Nolan films, there's very little actual detecting. That's probably true of Batman as a whole on the big screen.
I think he...
Dark Knight, there is a lot more detecting.
There's a bit of detecting.
There's ballistics tests.
Yeah. I don't think we've seen that World's Greatest Detective version of Batman yet. There's a little bit of it in the Affleck Snyder.
And there's a bit in the first Batman, where he's sort of detecting the Smilex stuff,
But we haven't really seen that, and maybe that's what Matt Reeves is going to go for with the Batman.
Maybe.
And maybe that's an interesting way you can take this character. If you were to make a proper film noir, a proper 1940s flavoured movie, not set in the 1940s, but if you were to make a Farewell My Lovely with Batman in the lead role, that would be really interesting to me. And it wasn't one of those movies that, to quote the script from Logan, ends up with a CG fuckathon with cities being destroyed. And that's one of the things that does slightly poison the Batman Begins well, ultimately. We talked about it a little bit already, where it ends up in this CG models destruction, and it doesn't really work given what's come before. And I think that would be an interesting way to take the character.
Is never mentioned again.
Never mentioned again. And of course, Gotham mysteriously changes completely from that movie, which was Pittsburgh, to The Dark Knight, which is Chicago. Okay.
Because there's still the canals in Batman Begins.
Okay.
But you know what happened in The Narrow? Is that little kid that Batman met, he became the king.
Yeah, he grew up to Joffrey. Yeah, he grew up to
yes,
Joffrey.
Yes, he did.
Absolute bastard.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Joffrey.
Batman's responsible for half the deaths in Game of Thrones. Yep. Thanks, Batman.
That's a weird universe.
Yeah. All right, so number one. Any guesses?
I can't imagine what it could be.
No.
Wait, is it Suicide Squad?
It is.
Yay.
Why so serious? It is
it Justice
Suicide
League.
Squad.
We haven't heard from that yet.
Justice League. Yeah, Justice League is, you know. Yeah. Anyway. It is The Dark Knight.
Hooray!
It's the, as much as I love Batman Returns, as a piece of filmmaking, that's the correct decision.
Helen is not convinced. She has lobbed a well-timed in this direction. Would you care to back that up?
It's very good. I just, I find some of its praise a little overdone, but it is very good.
Some of your praise a little overdone.
Thanks. Well, you know, I just like as a plot, as I've said, it makes not a lick of sense.
Yeah.
Not a bit.
It's
but, you know.
There's the Joker in it.
Yeah.
No, but like, that's the point, isn't it?
Get out. Well, it's the Joker. Plot holes don't matter.
But that's the point, isn't it? It's not a chaotic plot at all. Like, so many things have to happen exactly when they happen for that plot to make any sense, that it doesn't work as a Joker plot.
I want to change my best moment, because it is from The Dark Knight, and it's the introduction of the Joker. I think that just, nothing else comes close.
With the pencil?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Oh, hang on. Are you talking about the bank heist introduction to the Joker?
Sorry. Yeah. I mean the pencil moment.
The magic trick.
Yeah. Although
that's magic trick.
Great too.
That is an incredible incredible moment as well. There's so many incredible moments in The Dark Knight. Mm. But again, I feel that maybe goes off the rails a little bit towards the end.
A little bit, but a lot less than Begins did.
I wasn't so into the whole thing that he can survey everyone with, and again, timeliness, you know, people being monitored, etc. And with the glowy eyes and running around, I wasn't so into that. But then by that point, I was just like, this film's got a free pass.
There's been enough good stuff. Fine. Have 10 sloppy minutes, I don't mind.
And where do you stand on Ledger as the Joker?
Amazing.
Just totally brilliant. I mean, just beyond it. I mean, I kind of rated him as an actor at that point, but I remember when he was cast, like a lot of people, but like, really? Okay. I just did not expect what I was going to end up seeing.
Yeah.
And what he did with that character, just so great for the character as well, made the character so much more interesting. Like Helen was saying earlier, not giving him a backstory, not giving him an origin, having those, you know, those monologues, the look of him 10 times better than Nicholson's Joker, the idea that, you know, he could intimidate an entire room of mobsters with one pencil, whereas Batman needs, you know, tanks and armour and everything like that. And again, you know, you've got parallel, you've got your Al-Qaeda versus the United States parallel there. But coming back to Ledger himself, yeah, I mean, the way he found the voice, you know, the way he moved his face all the time, like he was chewing rotten meat the entire time. The prosthetics work was exemplary as well.
He's the only scary Joker. It's a terrifying character.
Yeah, that's a really good take. Nicholson's not too, well.
No, Nicholson's scary.
Nicholson's great fun. He's not scary.
I think if you were in a room
scary.
With
oh,
him,
God, yeah.
he'd be
yeah.
scary.
Yeah.
Leto, I think, is... I don't hate his performance as the Joker, but I think it's far too try hard.
I think it's misconceived. I think the idea of what they wanted the Joker to be for Leto is not great. Leto's a good actor. I don't... Yeah, his Joker's... He's an underwritten character in an underwritten film, I think.
I'm not even sure if it's written. I think you're giving it far too much praise. I'm fascinated to see what Joaquin Phoenix does with the role.
Absolutely. I mean, Helen says, you know, you shouldn't have an origin story, but Joaquin Phoenix is, as the Joker, I think, is just great casting. I'm certainly interested to see what that does.
To be clear, I think you can have a story about the Joker's early days. I just don't think you should have an explanation for the Joker.
Yeah.
So, depending on your definition of origin story. You could have certainly his rise too.
Yeah.
And I think Gotham's been playing around with some of that as well, which has been interesting.
I'll be honest, I haven't been keeping up with Gotham since I watched the first couple of episodes and they were terrible. But I know people who are fans and defenders of that show, and they say that it's good and they're sad that it's coming to an end.
Yeah, it had a shaky start, but I think it's gotten better. I haven't been watching it religiously, but what I've seen has been okay.
That's a tricky one. I've got mixed emotions because, again, I think my favourite portrayal and presentation of the Joker is The Dark Knight, and I like the fact, yeah, you've got Knight, he's like, you know, the shark in Jaws. Where'd it come from? No one asks. No one needs to ask. How did a shark get that big? It's just there, and it's eating people and creating terror and mess. But Killing Joke as a standalone, you know, graphic novel, short graphic novel, is a great piece of work. I love it. So, I mean, I know it's not an adaptation of that, but if it draws on it, I'm interested.
We shall see. We shall see. We'll come back in a couple of years' time and we'll do a Joker ranking. How about that?
Yeah.
We'll do it, because by that point, I think everyone in Hollywood would have played the Joker.
Yeah, but The Suicide Squad is not a Joker movie.
It's not an anybody movie, is it?
It's a movie about the Suicide Squad. I mean, come on.
Okay. Suicide Squad, attack! On that bombshell, that is it for our Batman episode of The Ranking. Join us next time for more ranking-related fun. In the meantime, thank you so much to Helen O'Hara.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Dan Jolin.
Thank you.
You all right, Dan?
Yeah, sorry.
He's Batman.
I'm Dan. We're all Batman.
Thank you, of course, to Ollie Richards.
Thank you very much.
The youngest of us.
Hey.
You going to a disco after this?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. Yeah. Going to take loads of...
Ketamine.
just drugs. I couldn't think of any names of any.
Meow, meow.
Yeah, I'm going to have a massive, massive bowl of meow, meow.
That's what Catwoman loves, isn't it? Isn't it? Meow, meow. It's a good joke. Anyway, and it's goodbye from me.
Thank you for saying your own joke was a good joke.
I just felt it wasn't getting the praise it deserved from other quarters.
I think it did.
That is the joke. That is...
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to go down the disco with Ollie and do a lovely big old bat dance. Oh, by the way, do you want to know how I got these scars?
No.
Dan, look at these scars.
No, I don't know how you got those, Chris, but I know how you're going to get these.
Oh, my God. All right, thanks
for
listening.
Put that pencil down.
Oh, Jesus. I want to see a magic trick. See you next time. Bye.